Hey guys, welcome back to May I Talk. This is a podcast show where we see it and do not zip it. On this episode, I spoke to Mr. Charles, who is a mental health professional, on the topic suicide and depression. Let's dive right into it to learn one or two things about depression and suicide. Hi, thank you and welcome to May I Talk.
Thank you.
Hey guys, so this is Dr. Charles. Wait, I'm supposed to introduce you as Dr. Charles?
Just Charles.
Okay. Yeah, it is. Can you do a little bit of introduction, you know, for my listeners to know who we are talking to today about a very important topic?
I'm a mental health professional. I live here in Minnesota, the United States. I'm a father. And yep, that's pretty much sums everything.
Yeah, so Charles is a mental health professor, and today he will be talking to us about suicide and depression, majorly psychosis, you know, and our mental health, what's going on in our head, what we're thinking of, and why it leads to depression. So before we start anything, Charles, I heard that about the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota. How has it been?
It's been, I would say it's been horrible because the pandemic led to a higher rate of anxiety amongst a lot of people. And that situation created a deeper anxiety because people had different views of what was going on. So they were kind of like, do I get angry with the protesters destroying stuff? Or do I have pity for the Black people and what they've been going through? So it had lots of mixed emotions, mostly anxiety that was happening at that time.
Wow. And I know that it's not easy being out there, but I'm sure that you and your family are keeping safe.
Yes, as much as possible.
Okay, so today let's go into the main topic of today, because I was reading up on depression and I was reading up on the suicidal rates in all around the world, especially in the United States and among Africans. And also, I actually never knew that children also go through depression until I started reading up on it. So today I wanted to shed light on it for us. First, tell us what you think depression is.
So basically, depression has not, it's not like a regular mental illness. You know, most mental illnesses are due to a chemical imbalance in your brain, most of them. But depression has to do with emotions, how you're feeling at that time. And I would say depression is a feeling of a downward spiral, where you feel mostly less of yourself. You feel you're not worth anything. You feel like no one is, you know, no one cares. You basically is a loss of love.
Okay, I would say so that. Do you think depression is spiritual?
Spiritual? No. Depression is very far away from spiritual. Spirituality is way different in the terms that spirituality has to do with religion. Depression has nothing related to religion.
Okay, so, but do you think, because African parents, when you tell them, oh, I'm going through depression, they'll tell you it's because you're not serving God a lot. Do you think that if African parents, you know, focus more on their children's mental health, do you think that they would have been able to give the help that these children deserve instead of them committing suicide or going for hard drugs and robbery and everything that is not supposed to be?
But definitely. I think if most African parents pay attention to the emotions that kids are feeling and listen to the children, because Everything is not go and read your Bible, pray too much. I had a situation where a friend of mine was suffering from psychosis, and a lady came in and she was like, "He's not praying enough." I just started laughing, because African people, most African people don't really realize the effect of mental health and on us as a people. They don't realize what it can do. So I think African parents should really pay attention to the children, listen to them, and also realize that kids can have depression. They can feel bad. They can feel left alone, even though you're giving them love, you're giving them clothes, you've given them food. Just a little minor detail can make a kid fall into depression.
Yeah, because I
Has nothing to do with the Bible.
okay, because I know a friend of mine that a kid has like anger issues and he's always complaining of stomach pain, headaches, gets irritated easily, and I told her that I think your son is going through depression, you know. You should pay attention to it. And she got like really upset about it because his grade was actually getting worse in school. So I don't know, how would you advise a parent who does not believe in depression?
The best way to advise someone that actually doesn't believe in depression, first of all, is to make them realize they have to believe in depression depression comes in many forms, and it's just like in mental health. We all, and medications, we all react differently to depression. Most people are happy. They're going parties and stuff, and most people deal with depression by going to excessive parties. Most people deal with depression by eating a lot. Most people deal with depression in so many different ways. But the difference with kids is they don't really understand what's happening to them. They just know that they are not happy, and that generally can affect everything the child is doing. The education, his life, his health, everything can be affected. So I would basically tell such a parent, I would say, hey, look, you have to realize that at this point, it's not medication, it's not the fact that a kid is not reading very well, it's not prayers. It's you have to ask this child, sit them down and listen to them. What is really wrong with them? A lot of times, if you sit a child down and ask the child, what is really wrong with you? The child should be able to channel that frustration to somewhere, or the depression to somewhere. And a lot of times they may not have an answer, but you have the responsibility to look at various factors around the kid and see what actually is the problem.
So, I was reading online and said poor nutrition is a huge factor in depression. How is this so, though?
I would say, just like I'd mentioned previously, most people deal with depression differently. And for some people, they eat a lot. For some people, they just stop eating. They just, like, I myself have gone through depression back in some, I think about 2014, 15. And at that point, I wasn't eating. I refused to get up from my bed. I refused to do anything. So my nutrition level was heavily affected by that. And a lot of times people just don't want to eat or do anything. The ones that react like that to depression, they just stay in their bed mostly from morning till night, and their nutrition level goes down heavily. And it's one way that it can affect your nutrition. Before you know it, you get sick. Before you know, your immune system is low, and it escalates into different other things.
Because I remember in 2015, 16, because I used to suffer depression, and but it got really worse in 2015, 2016. But I was still like spending my time going to the gym You know, I went to the gym in the morning and the evening. I spent like 2-3 hours in the morning. I spent like 2 hours in the evening. And I still get home and I just sink in my bed and I'm just depressed all night. Because I feel like working out was supposed to help me mentally, but I didn't know if it was making it worse for me. I was getting the body I wanted, but it wasn't really about the body, if you understand what I'm trying to say. The depression was sinking deep. I didn't even know why I was depressed. That's one thing about depression. Sometimes you don't even know the reason why you're depressed. And how do you help people who don't even know why they are sad, why they are so emotional and crying over every little thing?
You know, the thing here is, you know, during my explanation about the depression, I said sometimes it can be described as loss of love. And a lot of times people do all those things like going to the gym and going to these other things that you love, thinking that that will create some sort of satisfaction for you. Now, depression sometimes can be triggered from a past experience. It can be triggered from, it always most times have a trigger. So if something had happened, and to you it's a casual thing, it shouldn't really affect you, but in your brain it has triggered something that makes you feel, you know, makes you feel depressed, makes you feel like you're not doing enough. Just the fact that you have to have a goal for your body can cause you a depression, and you cannot realize that. Just the fact that you know you're working out every day, you need to get to this goal to get your body to that level, can cause you a depression. You're working out, you're working towards it, but the feeling of unsatisfaction alone can cause that depression. And there you go, you're trying to figure out what the cause of the depression is. Now, just like the kid, you have to look into so many factors around your life. Sometimes some people would be advised to change their life around 360 just to fight that depression, because your environment alone can cause you, can be the cause of your depression, and you may not realize it.
Wow. This is a very good information, because a lot of people don't know so much about depression, but yeah, they're going through depression. So now, as a mental health professor, you work with people who are going through a lot of mental problems, right?
Yes, as a mental health professional, I work with people.
Okay. All right. So like in Nigeria, they say, so you're working with people that are like going cuckoo and stuff. How do you deal with this? Knowing that you have to go back home to your family after work. How do you separate work from what you go through at work?
Well, the thing is, if you get to see it as a work, at that point, it's difficult to separate them. But if you see it as helping people, you love what you're doing. I see my clients as people that I love, I help. They have a problem, I have the skills, I can help them. That you know, whatever I do with them drops right there when I leave and when I come back home. And sometimes the experience of working with these clients can help you in your regular life. Yeah. So it's just, it's an advantage situation, because then your clients may tell you something that you realize that it's an effect on you and your family. You know, you work with, you are trying to work with that client, but indirectly you're working with yourself, you know? So it's not easy, but it's rewarding to work with such people and be able to understand that sometimes they can always, you know, help you in your own personal life.
Okay, so now I'm sorry, I just want to talk about you a little bit, because as a professional, do you sometimes feel like you are losing it? especially if you're working with someone who is extremely so difficult, or the person is painting a picture that feels like reality but it's not real. Do you actually feel like maybe you are in the same world that they're in?
You know, in mental health, you have to put yourself in the same world as your client. I once had a client that believed that she was the queen of Egypt.
I'm sorry. Wait, what? I'm sorry for
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
How did you
yeah,
do that?
You know, and she would, you know, talk to me about life in Egypt. She's never been to Egypt before. And she would talk to me about life in Egypt. And you have to bring yourself into their world to be able to assess
wow.
them. Because if you don't, you are just going to give a wrong assessment of everything and give a wrong help to the person. You have to be able to come into their world. And she would tell me about stories of the last pharaoh she got married to. And I would ask her questions based on that experience, because in their head is a personal experience that they developed. And you have to be part of that experience to be able to help them.
Wow. So you work with people who, I'm sure you work with people who hallucinate, see ghosts, picture themselves, you know. How do you deal with these people? How do you tell them, look, there is no ghost? Or do you just play along and say, oh yeah, there's a ghost. How can we chase this ghost away or something?
You know, at first, I would say you can't cure mental health.
Oh, you can't cure it.
There's no cure. You can manage it.
Mm.
It's manageable. It's not curable.
Wow.
That's the thing a lot of people don't understand. They think that, oh, you can cure this person. It's cure. You can manage it, because something being cured means that it is completely gone.
Mm.
But we all have mental health. So you cannot cure mental health. You can only manage.
Can a happy person go through negative thoughts regularly?
Of course. We all go through negative thoughts a lot. You know, a lot of times I've had myself hallucinate at some point in my life. So we all go through negative thoughts a lot. And regardless of if you're happy or not, your mental health can affect you anytime, any day.
Okay, one question I want to ask. I want to dive a little bit into people who give the wrong medication or the wrong diagnosis on people's mental state. Because I remember I was very sick last year. I was finding it difficult to breathe, and then I went to this particular hospital, no names called, and they gave me, what's the name of that drug again? Anyway, I can't remember the drug, but I started hallucinating. And do you think that if they prescribe the wrong drug for someone, do you think the person can end up in a mental hospital?
Yeah, of course. And the problem with mental health medications is that a lot of them don't really have a particular thing that they work with. Like, I know of a medication that helps with bipolar, but it actually helps with anxiety. I know of a medication that helps with hallucination, but it causes you loss of memory.
Wow.
Okay, yes.
So what's the difference between bipolar, psychosis? I don't know. I did like the same brother and sister or what?
Basically, I can say bipolar is multiple emotions at the same time. The person is feeling happy 1 hour. The person is feeling sad the next hour. And psychosis is a lot different. Psychosis has to do a lot with the mental illness, in terms of the person seeing things, paranoia, psychosis, paranoia, hallucinations. That's where the person saying that the person is a queen of Egypt. that's where it comes in, because part of the psychosis can be schizophrenia, can be schizoaffective disorder. So there are different branches of mental health. And, you know, like bipolar is a way different scenario than someone suffering from psychosis. You know, a lot of Nigerians, you know, those mad men with the crazy girl with the carry rod go and knock you for head for bucket. Yeah, those ones are called, they're the ones suffering from major psychosis.
So that what you're trying to say is easier to be friends with someone who has bipolar, but it is harder to be friends with someone who has psychosis.
Of course, a lot of Nigerians have bipolar. A lot of them have bipolar, and it's easier to be friends with them. And you know, someone with bipolar, at the same time, the person can be happy, sad. And in Nigeria, we'll deal with it in the water. You, my brain brush up first. You know, those kind of things. So we deal with them on our own level, but not realizing what this person is actually going through in their head.
Okay, that's beautiful. So now I want us to go a little bit into suicide. It is a very painful part of existence for a lot of people who are going through depression, are going through a whole lot of, you know, things. I've seen a couple of teenagers commit suicide because of a girl. What do you think is going on in their mind?
You know, suicide is not, nobody wakes up in the morning and say, hey, I just want to kill myself. But the thing here is, there are various stages before the suicide. I would say the first stage is depression. And like in mental health, there are various forms of depression. And the person gets to major depressive disorder. By the time they get to major depressive disorder, they start falling deep down into the spiral. And that's when they hit suicide. And a lot of people, I've heard a lot of instances where, oh, your girlfriend breaks up with you, and the next thing you hear that the guy committed suicide. A lot of times, it's not that feeling of rejection that made them commit that suicide, but it can be traced to a long history of rejection.
So rejection plays a very huge role.
Yes. So they are not committing suicide because the girlfriend left them. They may be committing suicide because my mother left me when I was 6 years old and my father abandoned me. And now this girl, you see? So it's not about...
I said it's a builder. Sorry? Of emotion.
Yes, it is. It is. And I myself, I recently had a friend who committed suicide December last year. It's hurtful because considering my position and the situation, and I was assessing the whole situation. He got a job in Lagos. He was doing perfectly fine. He was about to get married. He was supposed to get married last month. But then, all of a sudden, he hung himself in his living room. Now, I have assessed that situation several times, and I can't seem to understand why he took his life. And it could be an array of things. It could be that something happened, and it triggered something from his past, and he felt so less of himself and fell in that spiral. And that those things can happen within 10 minutes. And the person take their life.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry about this. I'm so sorry about hearing this. But you know, sometimes some people get murdered, and Nigerians will rule it as suicide just because they're too lazy to find who did it. I'm just saying, you know. But I understand, because now the way you're telling me now is self-esteem plays a very big role in mental health.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It does in a big way, because if you don't if you have a low self-esteem, you would always become a competitor against yourself and against other people. So you're competing with yourself by, the fact that you have a low self-esteem. You're trying to reach a certain level. You see yourself as a certain level, but you cannot achieve that level. It creates that depressive disorder for you. So if you, at the same time, you're seeing people around you are doing something different. So it's just a competition between yourself and others. And it's really chaotic in the head if you have to think
Okay, so
about it.
let me quickly ask you that some people would say they hear voices in their head. Are these people bipolar or they have psychosis? They are normal human
I
beings.
would
Like they go to work, but they hear voices whenever they're alone.
the thing here is a lot of mental health that relates to hearing of voices can be traced to schizophrenia, can be traced to schizoaffective disorder. Schizophrenia is one of the most popular mental health where you see people say, "Oh, I hear voices," and this and that. And it's not normal to hear voices. Sometimes it's normal to hear a voice in your head, but it's not normal to continuously hear voices. Now, at the same time, you have to assess what the voice is telling the person. People have, and if the person is acting out on that voice, some people have negative voices. Some people have positive voices. Most people that fall into psychosis are those that have the negative voices, because then you have a voice telling you you're ugly, you can't even achieve anything. They are calling you an idiot, but no one is actually calling
Just in
you
the
an
head.
idiot. Just in the head.
My God. I mean, I feel like I want to be a psychiatrist. This job is so beautiful. Okay, so some quick questions as well before we go, because we're gonna go very soon. Some people cause self-harm to themselves. Do you think these people will try to slit their own wrist, have eating disorder? Do you think these people ever think about harming other people other than themselves?
A lot of times they don't think about harming other people because the slitting of the wrist creates a satisfaction within them. I have a client currently that she slits her wrist whenever she feels that she's not loved.
How do you deal with people who feel this way, who have these negative emotions, and how would you advise an ordinary person who is not a professional like you, that has someone in their house or in their life that is going through these negative emotions? Because I know of this girl that her sister called me to help me talk to her because her dad died, and every time she drinks herself to sleep, she feels so stupid about who she is. And I remember I talked her out of it. I gave her some examples, but right now she's back at the game. So I feel like maybe I'm not just good enough for the conversation. How would you advise an ordinary person on how to treat someone who is going through self-harm and self-pity and very bad emotions?
You have to think about where the root cause of the problem is. Now, this client of mine that I'm talking about, her mom had a very horrible relationship with her dad, and she experienced that horrific life with about the parents living together, and they're separated now. But she had a rough childhood, and she never had a healthy relationship. Now, anytime she gets that feeling of someone not being able to care for her, love her, she feels like slitting. She doesn't want to kill herself. She just wants to have that satisfaction that, okay, I am feeling this way and I can physically see that blood is dripping. Now, with your situation, the person has to think about what the actual root of the problem is. What led her? It may be that the dad was doing something that the mom could not do in her life. So she has to think about the factors surrounding the root of the problem. Okay, her dad was taking her to the store once a week. That alone might be one of the reasons why she loves the dad. So you have to think about what is the actual problem, and where it's coming from. A lot of times you can help the person if you know where the problem is coming from. A lot of times you cannot because it's something that happened in their past and it has happened. So the only thing you can do is constantly remind the person to use their skills, something that makes them calm, something that makes them feel loved. To use their skills, if it's watching movies with people, use those skills and try to
Okay,
fight it.
so I understand everything you've said to us today. So I have just one last question for you before we play a game. Don't worry, the game is very easy. So how do you deal with mental manipulation at work? Like, I know that the people you've worked with, I'm sure some people have been to your workplace just because, they take drugs, they're like drug addicts. How do you deal with someone who pretends, oh, they're feeling better just so that they can escape where, they are locked up in and just go and have satisfaction? How do you deal with work mental manipulation from clients or patients?
I think the thing here is you just have to be able to keep the person engaged in a longer conversation and ask them questions. I have a client who constantly will tell you, "Oh, I'm doing very okay. I'm doing good." But then you ask him, "Oh, what makes you feel like you're doing good?" Then he cannot answer. So you have to ask the right questions. You have to be able to understand, what the person is trying to do. You have to be able to, ask this person some questions that they a lot of mental health clients, they have this default answers. Oh, what's wrong with you? I'm suffering from severe anxiety. Oh, okay. What's causing the anxiety? The weather is so bad, I can't even do anything. Oh, okay. What about the weather causes you anxiety? Oh, you know what? It's not anxiety. I think it's anger. You see the thing here? You have to ask the right questions. And as long as you don't ask the right questions, you can be manipulated as a mental
Wow,
health
that is so
professional.
good. Charles, you've really, really, really given I and my listeners a lot of things to think about. And I'm sure that every medical student out there who is listening to this right now, who wants to be a psychiatrist or a mental health professional, tomorrow or any other time they choose in their life, will be so grateful to listen to this podcast. But before you go, I have a game to play with you. It is called Would You Rather? You have si 5 seconds to answer each question. Just 3 questions. Don't worry. It's not that hard. You ready?
Oh,
All right. So, would you
yes,
rather
I'm
be
ready.
completely insane and know that you are insane, or completely insane and believe you are sane?
Completely insane
Oh,
and know that I
wow.
am insane.
Okay. All right. So, second question. Would you rather move to a new city every week or never be able to leave a city that you were born in?
Never be
Wow.
able
So, you
to
want to be
leave.
stuck? Okay. So, one last question. Would you rather wear every shirt you ever own every day for the rest of your life? Or would you rather just wear toilet paper once a week?
Every shirt I ever owned.
Right. Thank you so much, Charles. This was really fun listening to this. And thank you so much for coming. I'm so happy that you are a part of this. You, your family, stay safe. Remember to wear your mask, wash your hands, and I'm sure that everything you lay your hands on will be filled with gold from now on. Thank you so much. Thank you so much
Thank
for being
you.
part of the show. We would love to speak to you again.
Thanks for having me, and you have a
All right,
wonderful
bye.
day.
Hey guys, so this is the end of season one. Thank you so much for rocking it with us. It's been a beautiful whirlwind with our hostess with the mostess, Mo.
Hi, I'm sad we're going from season one, but I'm happy we're going to season two.
Yeah, we have so many hot shows. You know, we had a lot of beautiful shows from the masturbation show to porn addiction to sex with the ex. Had so many interesting people come and talk to us. And season two, we promise, is going to be even hotter and juicier.
Yeah, and don't forget to subscribe, review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Anchor FM. Thank you for sticking with us. We will see you in season two.